Welcome to the Custom Apparel Startups Podcast, your best source for information, news, tips, and tricks to get you off the ground running and earn success with your custom apparel decorating business. So get ready to soak up some knowledge. Now, here are your hosts, Mark and Mark.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Custom Apparel Startups Podcast. My name is Mark Stevenson.
And I'm Mark Vila, and today we're here with Small Business IT Talk, Part 1.
Yeah, and now we've actually like named this podcast about four different things, including IT small business stuff or Talk with Jay. Weekend Talk with Jay is what we may end up calling it, just so you know. Today we have with us our in-house IT guru, Jay Sayers, and Jay is the guy that keeps the 4,700 websites for all the Cold Essie and Coleman & Company related businesses up and running. So we thought he would be a good person to kind of bring in and talk about, you know, all the issues with getting online, like email, site hosting, and especially one of our hot buttons here internally is machine requirements for when you purchase apparel decorating equipment. And that could be the DTG printers, the embroidery machines, or the brush and bake even.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cutters, anything like that. All that stuff has certain requirements, so we'd love Jay to kind of touch on what are we looking for with a new computer and on that end of it, and then like you said, just some general business. So where do you think, where should maybe Mark or Jay, whoever you think should answer this, I've thought of a business. I've got a name for my business, or I think I'm pretty close to the name for my business. What should be my first step?
Jay?
Buy your domain name.
Okay.
So there are domain name registrars all over the place. There are services that actually purchase the domain name from the real companies that actually produce them for you. It costs somewhere in the neighborhood of $12 a year to get a domain name. You keep it for the year, you can renew it after that, you can buy it for longer. So if you're close to having a name for your business, go buy the domain name first so somebody else doesn't already buy it.
And where do you fall into the whole .com, .net, .marketing, .pickle kind of arrangements now you can get for domain names?
Generally, once you pick one, so you pick mycompany.com, the registrar that you go to is going to offer you several other ones. I don't usually buy them. .net, .org, they each have specific purposes, but unless your domain name is already been taken, I don't see the point in really getting most of them.
Okay. Mm-hmm. When you say registrar...
So there are companies that you've seen ads for all over the place that sell domain names cheap. GoDaddy's a big one. Namespace, Rackspace, Namecheap, HostGator, now, as of last week, Google.
Right, okay.
All sell domain names.
And that's great. And most of the places, though, that sell the domain names also do hosting as well. Is that right?
Almost universally. I think Google might be the only exception to that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And my thought on domain names is everybody assumes .com. So, and it's just a natural thing. Everybody assumes .com. It's that emails are end in that often. So if you're going to buy something and your primary business is going to be .net, just realize that a portion of people are just going to put in .com.
Right.
You know, or the .com may even rate higher on Google if somebody just searches your business name.
Yeah.
So I have a hard time wanting to buy a domain that's only available in a .net unless it's really, really important.
Yeah, the only time that I would object to that is if, you know, I mean, obviously, all of you out there that are listening to this and you don't have a business name yet, if you want to name your business ABC Embroidery or A to Z T-shirt Printing or something obvious like that, you're probably not going to get the .com, okay? Mm-hmm. So the only time I would recommend, going to a .net or a, you know, a whatever the latest... And after .biz is if you have a name of a business or a domain name that you really want and you really think is going to work for a specific reason.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you've got one that's 57 letters long like Coleman & Company.
You know? Yeah.
Keep in mind, too, that when you buy a domain name, so you bought yourcompany.com, you don't have to worry about the .net necessarily, but if you need some other domain name for that, so you have store at mycompany.com, you can also create, they call them wildcards. So www.yourcompany.com is an example of a wildcard, but so is store.yourcompany.com.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And you can do that for free with the domain name you already bought.
Oh, that's cool. So for making like landing pages or the shopping cart for your website.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So that, and I think a great thing, and what I've always done is sit at the computer with the domain registrar while you're thinking of your business name. So yeah. Have Google up or Bing up and a domain registrar up and search both before you file with the state to make sure that your business name, for one, isn't already taken by somebody down the road from you. And also that it's also not associated with something that you wouldn't want your customers to Google search and find.
So there's two good points there. First of all, I really like just the interface at GoDaddy just to see if a domain is available. Because they'll make all the suggestions and alternative suggestions for one that's available. But this has nothing to do with your actual business name. I just want to point out to everybody that you can go on to any service and get a domain name for your website, but that doesn't mean that you've established a legal business in that name.
Mm-hmm.
Or vice versa. If you go to, you know, here in Florida, I think it's SunshineBiz.
Sunbiz.org.
Sunbiz.org. Yeah. And, you know, you can look up a business name and you can register it. That does not mean that the domain name is available. Those are two completely different things.
Yeah. So you really want to have, in Florida, I would have three up. You know, then specifically for name, you know, I would have SunBiz and Google and a domain registrar before I pick my business name. And just find out whatever it is for your state. That's a good idea to just, it gets everything covered before
you commit. Yeah, I like that. I like that.
Keep in mind, too, that your domain name isn't just going to be the website that your customers go to. Ideally, it's also where they'll email you. So if they have a question, they can email info@yourcompany.com.
Right.
That's something that you want to have associated with your actual business name, ideally.
That's a good point, especially if you're going for like a more corporate clientele. So in other words, if you're going to approach, you know, IBM in Atlanta, they're not really going to take you as seriously if you have an AOL email address or if it's at hotmail.com as they will. It should be your domain.
So then what, they have to set up a website and pay somebody to do a ton of this stuff to get at their business name.com. It costs a lot of money, right?
Not necessarily. It depends on how you're doing it. Every registrar is going to offer you some kind of email package with them. Or you can use your existing domain name on a service like Gmail from Google. You can get free, I believe it's 5 free email addresses through Gmail using your domain name. So you'll go to gmail.com, you'll log in with info@yourcompany.com, and be using Gmail's interface and have people email you at yourcompany.com. You can get more addresses than that. You can link them together. However you need to run your email, you can do it that way. You can do that through basically any of the providers.
Right. And I have a confession. I probably have 7 email addresses that I run out of my Gmail account. Exactly like that. And they all have business domain names. Some of them Jay set up for me. They're attached to coldesi.com, which is our main domain, or colemanandcompany.com. And I run it all out of my Gmail account and on my smartphone.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and that's, it was a bit of a loaded question, of course, you know, because that's really the impression is that, oh, well, I just have at yahoo.com because I don't have a website and I don't have an IT person to keep it all up. And if you use a big name, you know, hosting, or not even hosting, but domain registrar and email provider, they basically will set it all up for you for almost nothing. Right?
Absolutely. And you can add to those as well. So, for instance, if you need to get office software to get your business up and running, so you need copies of Word and Excel, all of these companies also offer Office 365 service, which is email using your domain name, and then all of that Office software on multiple computers and your phone and online as well. All of these things all packaged together. So you don't really have to run any of it. You make one time.
So you can get Word and Excel and Outlook and
PowerPoint
and all that stuff and your email all kind of connected.
Connected on your phone, on your desktop, laptop, on a web page that you can go to and be able to edit documents or read them or whatever as well. Yeah. So all of these things are available, and it's every registrar has some kind of service like that available for you.
Yeah, because all they're really doing is they're hooking into available services from Microsoft or Google or somebody like that.
Yeah, they're just reselling them.
Right.
And they're pretty cheap. I mean, if you're only going for a few users, you're probably looking at something like $5 a month to do that. And that's just absolutely worth it to not have to show an @yahoo.com email address.
Yeah, that's great. And also, let's keep in mind that we're talking about discrete things. So, you know, we're talking about the domain registration, which is different than the domain hosting. We're talking about the domain name, which is different than your business name. Because it's easy if you're not, like, in this world and doing this thing, you know, all the time to get confused by it.
And at the end, we can do a little definition wrap-up.
Right. Oh, that's good.
Just at the very end, we'll just say, these are all the things we spoke of, and just as a reminder, and why, you know, just a minute at the end.
Yeah, okay. And while we're talking about hosting, I've really got to tell, like, my horror story, because there's more than one. What happens is, and I never recommend I don't recommend that you host your website with some guy you know, okay? There are a lot of small, like, website creators and service providers. They're usually consultants or, you know, guys that work from their house or their garage or something along those lines. They may be very talented and very conscientious. But when you host your website with these folks, that means that they're controlling where your website is located, whether it's up or down or if you have any issues. And it's a nightmare if they get sick.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a related company that spent about $1,500 getting a nice website created by an independent contractor, and they thought he was hosting it at a common hosting service like GoDaddy or HostGator or Bluehost or one of those, but it turns out he wasn't. He was hosting it at his house, and the downside is that he basically fell off the face of the earth, and now they have to go through all kinds of contortions to get their website downloaded and uploaded onto a new hosting service.
Yeah, and you could literally lose your entire website. And if you spent if you had it custom programmed and you had some shopping carts done by that person, if that person, you know, if their house catches on fire and everything goes down, your website could literally almost be disappeared.
Right.
Right? I mean,
absolutely. It is common for these guys to work like that while they're developing the website, before they make it publicly accessible,
yes.
While they're just making it something that you can see. That's normal to see. But it's something that you want to make an agreement with them on, that when they're finished, they'll move hosting to whichever provider you choose. And also, it's good to get an offline copy. So just a CD with all the files.
That's a good idea. Yeah, that's a good idea.
They'll change over time, and your offline copy won't, you know, be worth it to you a year from now. But at least in the meantime, if anything goes wrong, you'll have that.
Yeah, and maybe if they have set up a hosting account for you, you want to make sure that you have password access to it. And I have a big question for you, Jay, because you mentioned CDs, and I haven't actually gotten one of those in my hands in about 3 years.
CD is a catch-all term meaning floppy disk,
okay.
CD,
USB floppy
thumb disk. Drive, whatever it is.
You'd have to buy a stack of floppy disks to hold that.
So essentially, whenever they get whoever makes their website, however they make it, they should ask for an offline copy, something that they can have in their possession, whether it's on their computer.
It's always good to have one, but the most important thing is to make sure that they will then move the site to whatever hosting provider you've chosen.
Right.
Okay.
That makes sense.
And I think doing some internet research, Jay was mentioning before this, you know, it's about not endorsing anyone specific, but go online and do some research on the hosting provider. Do they provide support? You know, some of them will provide 24/7 support, where you can just call up and say, I'm getting another domain name because we're opening up a second store somewhere else. I want to have an individual domain, but I want it to go to that same website, and they'll just do it for you if you have one with support.
Right.
And you might pay a little bit more for that than you would for the cheapest service out there, but you do get, if you know nothing, you can call.
Yeah, so by the way, if you don't know what Mark was referring to, what you can do is, let's say you end up with a long domain name that is commonly misspelled, like ColemanandCompany.com, but you want a really short URL to use in advertisements or to use, you know, in print ads or in your email signature or something like that. So you might go out and buy CC.com or
like CC Deals. We have CNCDeals.com and ColemanC.com.
Right. So you can use those and point it, when people type that in or click on it, it will just go back to your main website.
Yeah.
That's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or and really just anything that you don't know how to do with, whether it's renewing it every year or right. all those things. If you have a company that provides customer service,
yeah.
I just find that to be huge because I don't know everything about that.
No, I agree. I actually use it all the time. As a matter of fact, the 24/7 thing is also a good idea because I know a lot of you that are listening to us now, you know, you work full time at a regular job and you come home afterwards at 7 o'clock at night and you're doing embroidery work or printing t-shirts and working on your website. You want to be able to talk to somebody if there's an issue. Okay.
So what's next down the list? They got a domain. They've bought some email service and whatever other copies, office things. They've connected it all together. What should be next from an IT perspective?
I'd say hosting would be the next thing. And it okay. may be the same provider that you're looking at, but it's the kind of hosting that you're going to get that you need to think about.
Okay.
So there are all kinds of options. If your website is going to actually sell things to people, then you're going to be looking for some kind of a storefront website. And they have those... off the top of my head, Shopify is a service where you can actually set up a shopping cart in a store pretty simply without having to do any programming.
Yep.
The important part of services like that is that they run the credit card transactions through them, so not through you. All of the PCI compliance, everything like that, they're on the hook for, not you. You're not going to become a credit card provider or authorized.
Right. That's a good idea. So. Now, and I know that a few ways I've gotten around that in the past is like developing a site with WooCommerce or somebody and just getting a PayPal account.
Yeah, absolutely. And I find that pretty easy. There's all kinds of ways to do that. You know, Square, PayPal, all of these different providers allow you to accept payments too. And that's all good stuff. If you're not actually planning on selling online though, and you just want to be able to advertise your services, things like that, then you're probably looking for a much simpler website, but possibly also one you'll have to have this developer build for you, too.
Right.
If that's the case, then for your hosting, the options that you'll see when you look for a place to actually put this website so that people can get to it are, you're going to see things called virtual servers or dedicated servers or shared servers. They're all essentially the same thing. They're space where your website can go, and you're just going to see different pricing tiers for them. 9 times out of 10, any sort of shared hosting is going to be fine for just about anyone.
Yeah.
All it really has to do with is the amount of resources that it uses. So if you're expecting millions of visitors per day, a shared host isn't going to do it for you. You're sharing that host with a number of other websites that have nothing to do with yours.
Right.
A dedicated one will do that job, but likely you don't need
You're not
that.
Going to need But by the way, if you are expecting millions of visits a day... then please go to coldesi.com and pick one each of each piece of equipment to purchase because you're going to be making a lot of t-shirts. So there's also something I'm looking at here in one of the hosting providers. What is SSL and what's the significance of that?
SSL is security. It's secure socket layers is what it actually stands for. It creates a secure connection between the person going to the website and the website itself. 9 times out of 10, it's not important for a regular, you know, going to find information. But if you're doing any kind of transaction on the website, it's okay. vital. In fact, it's required that there be some kind of security, and SSL is the main type out there.
Okay, so if you're just setting up, like, let's say, a basic WordPress site, or you're using the built-in website programming software in your web host, then you probably don't need SSL. Because you're just going to have pictures of your stuff up there and you want people to call or email you and talk about jobs.
Yeah, for that you don't require SSL. You can have it. There are people who speculate that that might give you a little bump in your search rankings.
Right.
Not a huge one probably, though. So considering the cost of the certificate, I probably wouldn't worry about it. And okay. that's the way SSL works, is that you have to buy a certificate from probably your hosting provider that yeah. verifies that you are the entity you say you are.
So if people are going to be inputting any personal information onto the website that's going to be stored on the website, you pretty much need to have that.
Even if it's not being stored on the website, yes, but we're talking about secure information, too.
Okay.
So if you put up a form on your website that is, put your name and email address in here to receive more information, you don't have to have SSL for that.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, but definitely with a credit card.
Definitely with a credit card, it's absolutely required. The requirements for doing credit card transactions online are steep and complicated, and it's just really not something that the average person. There are people whose job it is to understand that,
mm-hmm. right?
So their entire job.
So that's a good case for like the Square or PayPal, like you said, because generally those are just some sort of a module or a piece of program that you plug in that covers all of that for you in a way.
Yeah, you're looking for some kind of dedicated payment processor. Mm-hmm. There are tons of them out there, but just make sure. The term you need to look for is PCI compliance, and it's done year to year. It's audited constantly, so just make sure that they're PCI compliant for, you know, 2014.
Okay, and that is Paul Charlie Indigo PCI compliance. So that is a big deal. And honestly, if you go for one of the big hosting sites and one of the big, you know, software developers for websites, they'll walk you through that kind of thing. You know, when you register your domain, when you do your hosting, you know, they will definitely help you out with that 24/7 tech support phone number that you're going
to
want to get.
Yeah. It sounds big and daunting, but it's actually a fairly simple process to get that stuff set up using one of these providers.
Yeah, it's basically clicking a box and filling in some information.
Yeah, and actually what I saw on a website once, which is something nobody should ever do this, but it was an order form to fill out, and like two of the forms were just type your credit card number here. And I could tell that this was literally just a form that was emailing the information.
Your credit card, right.
So they can process it on their little hand, one, you know, the one that they bought from a local rep or something.
Right,
like
right.
That. And that's terribly insecure for your customers and dangerous, and you can get in trouble.
Right.
You know, if something goes bad with that.
You could lose the ability to take payments even in your storefront because you will have violated the agreement that you made with a credit card company.
Right.
Yeah, so taking credit cards online, you need to make sure you're using a service that does that.
Okay. Yes. So what we've talked about so far is we've talked a little bit about finding your domain name, getting it registered, the difference between that and your corporate name. The good idea of having your corporate registration, search for your domain and your company name at the same time.
Yeah, I really think that's a good idea, yeah.
And the fact that you can use, you know, like free Office email services or get it wrapped up with your provider, like with Office 365 or Google's version of the same thing, which is usually available through hosting as well.
Right.
And that you are only going to use a host that has at least some technical support and a 1-800 number, and not the web guy that you met or anyone you're related to host their host your website on their local computer.
Yeah.
Just because you never know.
And I think just to simplify it, and Jay, tell me if I'm right on this, but hosting basically means is your website is data, just like you have stuff stored on your computer. That data is stored on a computer somewhere. And that's how people access it. So when they type it in, that's physically reading that data off of a computer somewhere. And it's not your computer, obviously, and it needs to be a computer that is going to be on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Right. quick breakdown of terms. Hosting is the place where you put your website. It's mm-hmm. going to be, that's where people's computers will connect to it so that they can actually see it. That host is actually a machine called a server, and it's called that because it is serving the data out there.
Okay.
So when you get hosting from somebody, they're giving you some space on a server.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. So they're giving you a piece of that computer,
right,
to put all of your website information on.
Yeah, and you're usually actually purchasing some amount of that computer's resources. So they'll actually tell you what kind of processor and how much memory and how much disk space you're buying.
Mm-hmm. Right. But you don't need to know all that. All you need to know is after your website is up and running, if it's really slow, every time you open it and it's not your own internet connection, then they may need to give you a little bit more space.
Something like that.
A little bit more bandwidth.
Yep.
And usually they'll tell you if you start putting pictures on your website, you'll get, generally speaking, you won't be able to put any more on. You'll run out of space just like
right.
on your computer
or your
phone.
And I also just want to establish some like pricing parameters here. How much will it typically cost you to register a domain name for a year?
$10 to $12.
Okay, $10 to $12. Mm-hmm. Okay, is that a monthly fee or is that
no? That's for the year.
Okay, great. And now hosting, I just pulled up a couple of numbers here while we're talking, and you know, it used to be that you would pay between, you know, $40 and $80 a month to host a website, and now it's $1 to $12, and I do have a couple of sites that are hosted for $1 a month. They are not the kind that has the 24/7 technical support.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. But so, you know, I mean, if you're in the $4 to $10 range,
yeah, you're probably going to be just fine with there. Even if you end up somewhere in the $20 range, that probably has some further services added
okay,
to it.
Because the SSL,
you're not gonna go, yeah,
it costs more, right?
Things like that. And tying it in with all of these other services we're talking about, if they're all lumped together, you could expect to see as much as, I'd say, $20 a month, but probably
okay,
never more than that.
Okay, that's awesome. Does anybody have anything else to say here about the email and such? Because I'd really like to talk about system requirements for running your business.
Sure. I only have one thing to say about it is that all of these things, I think, are, if you're not going to have a website, that's fine. You don't have to have a website. We talked about that in the last podcast.
Right.
We talked about social marketing.
Yeah.
But I think it is number one important that you have to have a domain of some sorts and an email that says at something like your business name.
That is
whether,
a good point.
Whatever you choose it to be, because from a marketing perspective and a sales perspective, it's a huge trust factor.
Right.
You trust at, this is the business name, at businessname.com or .net, a lot more than you trust at AOL.com. It feels less professional, and I think it's just important for the long term of your business to just start that right away.
Agreed. And wait, I got to say this, and it goes twice as much for those of you out there who have cute personal email addresses, like hotgrandma@AOL.com or like... Steve the Hunter.
You just destroyed all those people.
I did.
Because everyone's going to email them now.
They are. Then you'll learn about spam filters. But I just want to make sure, especially that if you, even like today, right now, if you're starting a business and you're starting to send out emails to see if anybody cares or might be interested that you're starting a business, if your email address is something cute or unique that has nothing to do with business but has to do with a hobby or something about you, baldguy101, you know, things like that, don't use those email addresses.
Yeah.
Just call somebody on the phone before you do that. Because that's going to be the impression that people are left with. And that's why, you know, Mark's point about, you know, having your corporate domain name is a big deal. Because mark@colemanandcompany.com is a lot better than, mark sci-fi geek@... you know, gmail.com.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which, by the way, you really need to change that personal email.
Yeah.
Along those same lines, you should also actually, you know, take a good look at your domain name before you purchase it and make sure that it doesn't spell anything, you know.
Oh, right, when the letters are all together.
Some
right.
People's initials plus the name of their business turn out to be terrible, terrible.
Yeah, I know what you're thinking. I know what you're thinking of. Don't say it out loud. I know exactly what you're thinking of. Okay, enough of that. Let's talk about machine requirements. And I want to ask you about two different things, because there are two things. There's what kind of computer do I need to run my business, and what kind of machine do I need to run the equipment? And that is sometimes the same, frequently the same thing, but may or may not be. I'll just let you talk to that.
Well, as far as what kind of machine you need to run your business, I guess it starts with Windows versus Mac, and at that point,
right,
it doesn't really matter. I guess at that point, you do have some benefit of keeping all of your computers alike, and that can be limiting because for your machine software, you're running Windows. You don't get any say in that matter,
right? Let's stop right there for a second, because I want to say that one more time. So if you're looking to get into the business, and you're a graphic artist or a video editor, a creative person, and you're used to work, you just spent $4,000 on a beautiful Macintosh, you know, the latest machine with all the accessories, and you're really pumped about making t-shirts, you're going to need a PC.
You're going to need to return that.
You have to.
Yeah, no matter what brand of
or type of equipment,
almost all of them for this industry are there's not enough people buying embroidery digitizing software for them to make it available on every platform.
Right.
So you're generally just going to find it on Windows because most people have a Windows computer.
And you can use an emulator package if they're good enough, because we do have some people that do that, but you're all by yourself.
Yeah,
you know, there's no support for it.
And I'm a Mac guy. We at my computer, we have a lot. I mean, at home,
we're actually recording this on a laptop that has lighted fruit on the back, on the cover. So I think that's an Apple.
I love these computers, and I've used and built and done a ton of computer stuff since I was a teenager. And I like the user interface. But the bottom line is, if it's for my business, I'm still going to own a PC. I'm not going to depend. I know how to use them, and I still own a couple PCs at home, just because it's just never seamless on any of the emulators or any of your Parallels and your Fusion, VMware and all that stuff. It's just never as good as just having the PC, and they're so cheap.
Right.
Just get one.
So for your office, you know, for working in your office, you can use what you want. Right, for working on apparel decorating equipment.
Yeah, if you're doing accounting and spreadsheets and stuff like that, use whatever you're comfortable with. It doesn't matter. If you're doing work on machines, even if you're planning on branching out of this industry and going into sign printing or vehicle wraps a little bit, you know, further away from apparel decorating, you're still going to be using Windows.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So.
Yeah.
The good news about that is that you can get a whole lot more computer for a whole lot less money.
Right. So let's talk about minimum requirements.
So minimum requirements are something that you should always aim well above. That's not the get this and you'll be fine level of purchasing for a computer. That's the you must have this, and if your 8-year-old computer happens to have it, you'll be okay until you can buy an upgrade.
Yeah, good.
Speaking of which, your 8-year-old computer does not. Should you be starting a new business and getting new equipment, get a new computer for it.
Right.
Have something dedicated for this process. It's safer for you. It's easier to get everything set up, and you don't have to worry about, some piece of software that somebody installed on your machine 4 years ago causing a conflict that makes one of your USB ports not work.
Right, and then you just get angry with us. Okay.
Well, so I have then a question about that, because I don't think that we should name specific numbers or anything on what your computer should have, because that'll change in months. But generally speaking, over the years, how much money should they spend on this computer? Like, if they spent minimum this, they should, in theory, should be fine.
Okay. So if you were looking at, let's say, a desktop. Mm-hmm. And that just means the computer itself, not the monitor. They come with a keyboard and mouse.
Right.
If you spend somewhere in the neighborhood of $600 to $700, you're going to get a computer that will last you for several years. It should be pretty solidly loaded with hardware. You just want to make sure that you're not getting one that is completely full of software that they're charging you a lot extra for. So,
right.
If you haven't heard of the brand of computer and you can go and play a demo, you know, play with an actual demo on it, look on there. And if you see a bunch of software installed on the machine in the store that you've never heard of, that's probably not the computer you really want.
Right.
There's not very much free software that comes pre-installed on a machine that is useful to anyone.
Mm-hmm. Right. So you know, what you're talking about is $600 to $700, and that's not a magic number.
No.
Because you could spend a lot more. What you're really looking for is all the software that we use, all of the Sierra products like Stitch Era Liberty for embroidery digitizing or Hotfix Era for rhinestones. And everything that you're going to use for DTG printing, which includes C6, the RIP software, you're probably going to want to load CorelDRAW or Photoshop on there. They all love two things, and that is they love RAM.
Yeah.
So my basic philosophy is no one has ever installed too much RAM into a computer. Okay, exactly. It's never happened. RAM is happiness. The more you have, the happier you will be. And the other one is the graphics card. Because it's the speed of display.
Yeah, so graphics cards in this industry are interesting. Some of the software takes really heavy advantage of a good graphics card, and others don't.
Right.
So if you're getting into Sierra software for embroidery and rhinestone machines, things like that, then you want a good, solid, heavy-duty graphics card in there. There are two major players, so, and there's really only two major players out there in graphics cards, NVIDIA and ATI. If the machine doesn't come with one of those cards installed, it's a pretty easy add-on. You can get them installed for you at the computer store where you bought it, or you can do it yourself. It's really not a tough job to do. And you can get a good graphics card for somewhere in the neighborhood of $75 to $100.
Okay. So let's go with that person that, you know, they've only ever used their computer for email.
Right.
You know, so do you have an opinion, like, versus onboard graphics, like the really thin computers that don't have a separate graphics card, it's just built into the system itself?
So, and that's what happens with laptops primarily. Okay. Is laptops, you can't add a graphics card to. They're built into the motherboard, and on some fancy desktops, like the all-in-ones, that's the case as well. If that's the case, if you've bought a computer that you can't add a graphics card to, well, then you have a computer you can't add a graphics card.
Right.
That's just all there is to it. Doesn't mean you can't run the software, but you could get more speed out of it if you're running something better. So for this kind of stuff, I'd recommend a desktop computer.
Okay.
For one thing, it's more configurable. You can add or remove things as things change down the line. Also, if a component dies, you're not completely down. So if your graphics card happens to die because somebody tripped on the cord and ripped the plug out of it, you can just go get a new one.
Right. Okay, so, and I want to do a little disclaimer here because, you know, we're talking about computer stuff. I just want to say it's not our fault. Okay, so if you, for example, we get this a lot, is someone will, you know, they'll look at these systems requirements that we recommend and they're minimum standards, and they'll go out and buy a computer, and most of the time it's because, you know, it comes with all the preloaded software applications that Jay mentioned a moment ago. But, you know, and they'll try to install Sierra software and it will stop all the time. Or they'll, you know, load Photoshop on it and it reboots automatically. You know, we're not a computer maintenance and support company. You know, our organization is devoted to the apparel decorating business. We have a lot of knowledge that's come from that, but we don't fix computers. So we're going to make the best recommendations that we can, and you're going to make the best purchase that you can. May not always work out. You may have conflicts.
Well, I don't think we've ever run into a situation where we couldn't get somebody's software to run at some level, but there have been situations where somebody's computer ran it so poorly that they went out and bought a new one anyway.
Right.
I don't think that's ever happened with a new computer, though. I can't imagine that it would. As far as requirements for machines and what you ought to go get, though, you can't name specifics because they do change too often, but right. There are some general ranges that you can look at. So there are only two major players for computer processors. There's AMD and there's Intel. They both make good processors. It's fine. You can get either one. You'll talk to people who have ideas about which one works better, but honestly, don't waste your time with that. Get a good one. Get one you can afford.
They're amazing. Yeah. You know, it really doesn't matter.
Yeah. So don't get a bottom of the line one. Get one that's at least in the middle of the road for nowadays, and get one that has as many cores as you can afford. So each of these processors has essentially multiple processors wrapped into one chip, and each one of those is called a core. So right now you'll see a lot of dual core or quad core computers, sometimes even more than that. I wouldn't say get anything less than a quad core computer right now, and next year I might be telling you 6 or 8.
Okay.
So look in that range, though. Don't look for 2. Look for more than that.
So maximum amount of RAM that you can possibly find, mm-hmm. and maximum amount of cores.
Cores for your CPU. So interchangeable terms here. CPU is a processor. So if they tell you that you've got a 4-core processor, that's your 4-core CPU. If they tell you that this machine has X gigs of memory, that's the same thing as RAM.
Right.
RAM and memory, same thing. If they tell you it has X gigs of hard drive, that's a different thing. That's disk space. That's how much you can actually store on the computer.
Yeah, and honestly, the hard drives now are so big, you're never going to use it all, and if you do, you'll be able to go out and buy external storage or a little USB drive or something like that, or even free online storage, you know, that I don't even think that's a consideration.
It's only a consideration in that you want to make sure that the computer you buy, packaged out of the box, has a good-sized hard drive. And by good size, I mean 1 terabyte or better.
Okay.
That's 1 TB is how you'll see it.
No now, now we're saying this in January of 2015.
Yep.
Probably next year, there'll be a new... You know, a new terabyte standard.
Well, when people listen to this in like 2075,
they're going
to
be laughing.
Yeah, they're going to be laughing. I think it is
in February. February.
You mean when they have it downloaded into their brain? Because no one will be listening to things anymore.
So I think that it is a good idea if you don't know much about computers. If you know about computers, everything we've just said, you just completely understood, and you know what to buy. If you don't know a lot about computers, I recommend going to a store that will help to configure things ahead of time, or a local computer shop that will either build it or buy and help you configure it.
I was going to recommend that too, and I'll tell you some things to say when you get in there too. So if you don't speak the language already, this can be daunting. When you're telling them that you need to get a graphics card, they're going to assume that you're playing games on the computer.
Right.
You can spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars on graphics cards. So just tell them, I need a graphics card that's good for things like Photoshop or that kind of work. I don't need to play games with it. That will save you a ton of money right there. You can tell them that, you know, I need some storage. I don't need a huge amount. 1 terabyte would be good. You can tell them that I want as much memory as you can put in the machine at a reasonable price. So, you know, you don't want to spend $400 on memory, mm-hmm. but you want to get as much as you can possibly afford, and you want to get a CPU with at least 4 cores, if not better.
Mm. And the IT guys that you go to talk to, they will all have their own opinions on what you should build.
Absolutely.
You know, so that's an IT guy thing. They know a lot of things that all of us don't. So they're going to be happy to share that with you. And they're going to tell you, you don't need to buy 84 gigs of RAM, you know, at $1,000. You know, they're going to say, by 4 or 8, you know, I mean, I gather that'd be right.
You'll end up using as much as you buy.
Yeah.
So buy more than you think you need and you'll end up using it.
So the computer folks that you go to, well, they can, you know, if you find somebody that's good, if you bring your system requirements with you, I think is probably not a bad idea either. Mm-hmm. Cause some of them will even have things like good, better, and best, you know, requirements. I've seen stuff like that.
Sure.
Some will show minimum. If you bring that, whoever's going to build the computer is going to know that they shouldn't build the computer to those minimum specs. They're going to build it, like you said, mid-grade, at least.
Only caveat I would have about all of this is if you do go to some, you know, local shop and have them build a computer for you, that's fine. There's lots of good local shops that do that. Make sure that they give you copies of your system disks, all of your drivers, even they might refer to it as an image of the hard drive. So you have something if anything goes catastrophically wrong and you get struck by lightning and everything is zapped, where you can restore from scratch and get everything back up and running again.
Otherwise, you won't have a copy of Windows.
You would have
Microsoft
nothing.
Word or anything else that you might have purchased with it. So yeah, that's really good. So if you go to a big box store, make sure that they have a service that you can kind of say, I want all of the, I don't want any of that free bloat software on it. Can you take it off for me? And this is for the folks that don't know how to do it themselves,
yeah.
I think.
So that should cover everything as far as your computer goes, but there's one more thing that nobody ever talks about that you absolutely must do, and
yes,
that's backup. You always hear everybody tells you to back up, and nobody ever does it, and then their computer breaks or something goes wrong, and then they come to me and say, can you get this back? And I said, no, because that's a molten hunk of junk now.
Just so you know, he was staring directly at me when he said that.
It happens to everybody, and it happens all the time. There's lots of ways to back up. There's lots of free ways to back up. Even if you don't back up your entire computer, and do back up your entire computer, but you should find some way of storing important documents, you know. If you lose your accounting spreadsheet that you hand do in Excel, that could be seriously detrimental to your business. So
Right. There
are free online cloud storage things where you can at least put a copy of a file where it's offline and safe for you, maybe not from the
fairly outside. Safe, yeah. So so yeah, I mean, like, for example, I keep all of my personal and professional documents in Dropbox. so I can access them from my phone or from any computer.
Mm-hmm. And I know Mark uses Google Drive a lot for the same thing. I use both of those and then another service called Box as well.
Yep.
So those are all good things. They're not technically backup. They're other copies of your file. You really do need actual backup. Now, the good news about that is that you don't have to buy software for it anymore. You can get greater levels of backup, but Windows backup works really well anymore. If you're on Windows 7 or above, Windows backup is going to do enough of the job for you that you can recover files when you need them. It won't recover your programs, so don't throw away your serial numbers or all that kind of stuff, but it will get your data back. But you got to put it someplace, and you can't put it on the same computer that you're backing up, because if something happens, it goes down.
That's a good point.
Easiest thing to do is to get, it's called a NAS drive, network attached storage. It's a hard drive that connects up to your computer network, plugs right into the back of your router or your modem from your ISP, and then your computer can access it across your network. You don't have to do a whole lot of configuring. You can just see it. It'll act as a hard drive for you, and you can save everything you want to it.
Okay.
Spend about 160 to 200 bucks one time on this thing, and it should give you good redundant backup.
So let's reduce that down to the guy or the woman that is just like they're in their bedroom with an embroidery machine and the new computer they just bought. Mm-hmm. So are you talking about an external hard drive that can plug into the USB port?
You can do an external hard drive that can plug into the USB port as well. The reason I don't like those is just because there's every chance that you won't go plug that USB port into your computer and do a backup.
Okay.
Whereas if you use Windows Backup, you can schedule it, and it can do it automatically to this, they call them a network appliance, network attached storage. So it just sits there on your network all the time, and it's on. Windows will automatically connect to it, back up your data, and boom, you're safe. Mm.
So is that something that they could talk about, like if they've got Verizon Fios or Time Warner or
absolutely Comcast? For all of these internet service providers anymore, there aren't too many of them that don't give you something with more than one plug in the back that you can plug separate devices into. Yeah. So.
And this will work on a Mac too. So even if you have that PC, but you still use your Mac for, say, your Photoshop or other things, that as Time Machine is what they call it, just like Windows. Mm-hmm. And they both do the same thing. And sometimes if you want them to connect to the same one, you can even do that. But that's a more complex IT situation. But you can still do that.
Yep. You can dumb this down as much as you want to and just click start on Windows Backup or Time Machine. Or you can make it as complicated as you want to and be able to restore, you know, one file from 3 p.m. Mm-hmm. 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, and so, and I agree 100%. At my house, I'm huge on everything being backed up from my entire family. I always make sure that we're backing it up. And then the things that are really, really important, I still will use. I have them all. I've got Box, I've got Dropbox, I've got iCloud through Apple. I've got, if you have Amazon Prime, which a lot of folks listening to probably have it statistically, they provide a free drive with a few gigs on it, and you could just drop just a file there. Just like, this is just really important, that if everything blew up, I can access this one file here in this one place that's really important to me.
Yeah.
And then you can keep multiple copies in multiple places, and the ones you can access from mobile are particularly nice if it's information that you need to grab on the go.
And that's great if you've got a working computer, but if your house just got flooded, what you want out of backup is the quickest that you can get back up and running on something else.
So
it's good to have, you know, these cloud services, because you can get to a file, but if you don't have a copy of Photoshop installed on some running machine,
then
you know you're out of luck.
It's useless.
So backup isn't so much about saving your data. It is, but it's more about how quickly you can get your data useful again.
That's actually an awesome point. That's really good, because you can access, if it's a particular file that you just want to keep a backup copy of, that's significantly different than your business being down.
Right.
You know, for me, I came into this industry as somebody who did on-demand t-shirt printing. And I would have customers call me up and say, hey, I need to come by at 3 o'clock. Can I pick up, you know, three of this design? Okay, great. I've already got the design. I can just bring it up, print shoot three shirts, take their money when they get there. But if your computer is down, how long is it going to be before you can say, yes, I can have those shirts for you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a really good point.
Yeah, that's particularly good. So I think that we've covered the basis of what we've said we are going to cover today. And we've kind of gone through some of the definitions. think a little simply. What's, I guess, a wrap-up thought from what we've said so far, and what's the most important thing that you've spoke about today?
Backup is the most important thing. Even if you haven't done anything yet, that's where you start.
Okay. There you go.
So when you buy the computer, you should also at the same time you're buying that computer, you should probably be buying your backup drive.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, at the store that I often go to, it's on the next aisle over from the desktops, is all of these NAS drives.
Okay.
Yeah. So then just ask, say, I need to back up too. Mm-hmm. And they'll make sure you get the right size.
Great. Okay. Well, thanks, Jay, the IT guru, for sharing your knowledge with us today. And I think that does it for this edition of CAS Podcast. The name of this episode is the IT guru speaks about small business computing. Important things for apparel decorators. I think that's what we're going to sign. Part one.
I'll probably call it something simpler than that when I put it online.
I hope
we'll
do.
Go with that. I'll let you go with that. But we're saying this is part one because we had discussed before this that you could probably have a whole podcast just on business IT.
Yeah, alone. Exactly.
So as our customers ask us things, and as you guys go online to caspodcast.com and submit your questions to us, which please do go on there and ask us some specific things, and we'll do our best to answer or at least point you in the direction of where to get the answer. Then we'll do this again, and we'll talk about some other things that have to do. So if you have IT requests on what we can talk about next time, that would be fantastic too, because we can go in depth on a lot of it, really.
Okay.
All right, great.
Yep. Thanks for listening to CAS Podcast.
Thank you. Thank you.